This is one of those Sundays when I'm reminded again of how incredible a community this is, what we have already enjoyed, heard during this service, Shannon's children's sermon, the way you told that story was moving to the kids and moving to myself, and the soul questions that Donna and John prepared and read, or I don't know, okay, John prepared it. You know, I've always believed that there is more truth in a well-phrased question than in many of the things we call answers, and you have blessed us with so many incredible questions. And I'm thankful for this community, for everything you bring to your life together and to our worship together. But we've heard a story, a very familiar story in our scripture lesson, a very ancient story. And one of the problems that we have as modern people listening to an ancient story is that this story comes to us with layers upon layers of interpretation, so that it's hard for us to really know where the story stops and where the interpretation begins. And especially for us who are in the church, who live in the West, who have grown up educated in the West, we have heard this story influenced even in ways we're not aware by the one who is probably the most influential, powerful interpreter of this story who ever wrote about it. And that would be the Apostle Paul, who, writing in the fifth chapter of Romans, gave a brief commentary, a brief midrash on this story from Genesis. The fifth chapter of Romans is actually one of the lectionary lessons for today, but I have not had it read because I don't want to put the story and this particular interpretation of the story on a par, because Paul gives one way of hearing it, but it's the story that we need to attend to. But Paul has influenced the way that we in the West hear this story. In the fifth chapter of Romans, Paul says something like this. Paul says that in Adam, sin entered the world and infected the human race, and that we live because of the consequences that Adam incurred. We all live with that condemnation. This was Paul's interpretation of the story of Adam and Eve. And then Paul's reading was taken by others and further developed and further embellished, eventually becoming something that's called the doctrine of original sin. You had somebody like Augustine, St. Augustine, who lived in the fourth century, for instance, who Augustine was the guy who, as a young man, prayed, "Lord, make me chaste." But not yet. And Augustine, approaching this story with his own issues, saw in the sexuality that is implicit in the story, the roots of sin. And that's where Augustine took Paul. Then later on, you had John Milton writing that famous poem, Paradise Lost. And poetry and art is what puts this in our imaginations. But Milton, for instance, put out the interpretation that the serpent represents Satan. Satan is incarnate in the person of the serpent in that story. So was Paul right? Was his interpretation along the right line? I don't think that's the right question to ask. Paul approached the story with his own concerns. He was trying to answer questions in his own mind about what the life and death and resurrection of Jesus meant, and he found in the Garden of Eden story clues that helped him in his own search. But it seems to me that there are some details in the story that Paul did not attend to. You know, this story, as heard in the way that Paul has taught us to hear it, goes something like this. Adam and Eve were living in the Garden of Eden, in paradise. They had everything they needed, anything they could possibly want. You know, all they had to do if they wanted to eat was reach up their hands and pick a fruit from any of the trees in the garden, kind of like being on a cruise ship, I guess. It was all there for them. And there was only one limitation that had been placed on them. You can eat any of this fruit you want, except for the fruit from this one tree. The tree of the knowledge of good and evil. If you eat that fruit, you will die. Well, you know what happens if you tell somebody that there's one thing they can't do, if there's one fruit that is forbidden to them. If you make something forbidden, you make it attractive. And it becomes obvious to anybody reading the story how it's going to end up. The only question is, how is it going to end up that way? And so in the story, you have the snake. Now, in John Milton's reading, the snake is the antagonist. The snake is Satan coming to tempt Eve. And in Augustine's reading the story, the snake comes to Eve because, in his androgynistic, misogynistic ways, Augustine felt that Eve was the woman. She was emotional, not rational like Adam, and so she was easier prey for the serpent. Anyway, I don't buy that, but that's how the line goes. The serpent went to Eve and said, "Look at the fruit from that tree. Did God really say you can't eat it?" And Eve said, "He said we can't eat it or even touch it or we will die." And the serpent said, "You won't die. God knows you won't die. God isn't going to put poisonous fruit in this garden. The reason that God doesn't want you to eat from that tree is that if you eat from it, you will get the knowledge of good and evil and you will be like God." And so God is being jealous. God doesn't want you to be like himself, like herself. Well, planting the seed in Eve's heart, she looked up at that tree and looked up at that forbidden fruit, and it looked so good, and she imagined how it could taste. And she picked it, and she didn't die. And she took a bite out of it, and likewise, she noticed that she didn't die. She turned to Adam and said, "Hey, look. Ate the fruit. It's really good stuff. I didn't die. Have a bite." No, rational Adam was even quicker to eat it than emotional Eve, whatever that means. And then their eyes were opened. And they noticed something they had not noticed before, that they weren't wearing any clothes, that they were naked. And they felt embarrassed. Maybe they felt shame. I don't know. The story says they sewed fig leaves and made loincloths for themselves to cover themselves up from each other. And then in the next scene, they're walking through the garden. And God comes across them and says, "How's it going? It's a nice day, isn't it?" Yeah, Adam says, "You always make nice days here in Eden." God says, "I notice you're making a new fashion statement. What's happening?" And to his credit, Adam did not lie, but on the other hand, he did not accept responsibility for his own actions. He said, "Well, the woman you gave me made me eat the fruit." And then the consequence happens. They're thrown out of the garden. Eve has to bear children with pain. Adam has to work hard to grow food for them to eat, and paradise is lost. And that's how we in the West, in the tradition of Paul and Augustine and John Milton, have learned to read this story. But as I said, there's some details that Paul has not attended to. Like the fact, one of the things that has always intrigued the rabbis, the rabbinical interpreters of this story, who have asked the question, did not God intend for them to eat this fruit? And would not God have known perfectly well what they were going to do? Or to look at the story from another point of view, I find it intriguing the role that Eve plays in this story and in the biblical narrative. Has it ever occurred to you that Eve has the honor of being the first human being to speak a sentence in the entire Bible. Eve has the role of being the first human being ever to question a boundary that's been set up, ever to question whether what she's heard is true. Eve is the first human being to explore, to think about, and to and reach out and explore a new possibility. Eve was the one open eye who ate the fruit, who assumed the knowledge of good and evil and all the responsibilities that that brings. So I think of Eve not as somebody who was tempted by the serpent, but as somebody who embarked on a courageous journey of faith. My favorite television show is shown Friday nights on CBS on Channel 5 at 8 o'clock. I don't know if any of you have ever seen Joan of Arcadia. I see some nods out there. I love that show. It's an incredibly written show. Whoever writes it must really have a solid theological education, because it's good theology. But in this Friday's show, this past Friday's show, what happens in the episode, Joan of Arcadia, the name obviously is meant to sound like Joan of Arc, who had visions from God. But Joan of Arcadia is a high school junior who has conversations with God. God appears to her in the guise of different people in her life and speaks to her. They have conversations. Maybe by cell phone sometime too. But God speaks to her. But what's happening in Friday night show, Joan is in love with a boy in her school named Adam. Maybe not coincidentally named Adam. And Adam and Joan are each other's first love. And in the beginning of the show, Friday night, Joan was just daydreaming of the day when she and Adam would get married and just dreaming about different outcomes of that. But then stuff happens to kind of muddy up her dreams. Life tends to happen like that. You know, there's this perky blonde student who starts hanging around Adam, and Joan is jealous. And she seems to be interested in Adam, and Adam seems to be a little bit interested in her. And then Joan, who is getting tutoring from a college student, feels herself attracted to that college student and lets him kiss her, and then she feels guilty and confused about that. And her beautiful, I'm in love, it's going to be the person I marry and live with forever picture is shattered a little bit, and she doesn't know what to do with it. And in one of the scenes at the end of the show, God comes to Joan and says this: the illusion dies so that something deeper can take its place. The illusion dies so that something deeper can take its place. And I think that that's what's happening when Eve eats the fruit from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. An illusion is dying. The illusion that we can live our life in a paradise like Eve, where all we have to do is pick a fruit and we're fed. Life like that is empty. We can't live our lives on a cruise ship. The illusion dies. One of the things that we discover as we get into life is that even the most basic decisions we make are complex. The world is not black and white. Decisions are not easy. Every decision has to be weighed. The world is shades of gray. The world is filled with ambiguity, so that even the most basic ethical decisions are fraught with difficulty. Like during the last election, people debating, should I vote for the Green Party candidate who I might agree with 90%? Or should I vote for the Democrat who I might agree with 70% but who has a real chance to win? Do I vote my real beliefs or do I vote my pragmatic beliefs? there is no right or wrong on that. We each have to make our own painful, considered decision. But that's what eating the fruit means. It means that our eyes are open to the ambiguity of the world, to the difficulty of the choices that we are to make, but also to the fact that we are partners with God in building a better world. And so we have the responsibility to make those choices as best we can. Joan was not the first sinner, although she was that. Joan was the first saint. Eve was the first saint. She dared to question a boundary. She dared to take the step into maturity and adulthood and responsibility. And she dared to let the illusion of Eden die so that something deeper could take its place. God calls us to that kind of journey as well.